Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm Rick Bennett. February is Black History Month, and we're going to start just a few days early. My first interview is with Russell Stevenson. He's a PhD candidate at Michigan State University, and we'll learn more about him in a minute. He'll be talking about Elijah Abels, or Abel, as most people say. Elijah was the first black man to hold the priesthood back in the 1830s. And he's got a very interesting life. Russell wrote a biography on Elijah Abels, and we'll learn more about his interesting life. Like, was he a slave before he joined the church? We'll ask as much about his early life as we can. Check out our conversation. Before you do that, I just want to point out that we've got a lot of books for sale this month. All of our books on black history, such as this one with Paul Reeve, Darren Smith, are going to be on sale, as well as Margaret Young. Oh, she's not up there, but... please check that out. They're all going to be 25 to 30% off for the month of February. So if you're really interested in black history, here's your chance to get a good deal on some of our other conversations. So just by the way, we're going to be talking to Newell Bringhurst later this month as well. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I also want to point out that our John Hamer and Locke Mackay book is now on sale at Amazon. So please check that out. And purchase a transcript. If you purchase a subscription for $10 each month, you'll be the first to receive a transcript for that month. So I've already sent the people who are subscribers, our Locke Mackay and John Hamer interviews. So anyway, it's going to be a fun month. Now back to our conversation. So I'd like to welcome you all out to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm really excited. I'm taking advantage of all the people that come to Utah, so I don't have to travel to them. But I'd like to introduce you all to Russell Stevenson. Russell, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of your academic history and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And I love all the work that you've been doing to promote the study and the knowledge of African and African-American history within the Latter-day Saint community. As far as my background, you know, I was born and raised in a little town in Star Valley, Wyoming, 2,000 people. Our county was literally called a frontier county, according to the U.S. government, at least last time I checked. And, you know, I'm currently in a PhD program at Michigan State University. I'm studying African history under Dr. Wando Achebe, and I'm currently working on a dissertation on the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in post-colonial Nigeria. I am the author of For the Cause of Righteousness, A Global History of Blacks and Mormonism, that won the Best Book Award from the Mormon History Association in 2015. I've also written a biography of Elijah Abels, called, or you know, as some renderings have it, Elijah Abel, Black Mormon, the story of Elijah Abels. You know, my interest in African and African-American Latter-day Saint history stems from, you know, a rather interesting and I think a layered set of experiences that stem from my family, stems from my educational experience, as well as my ecclesiastical experience as a missionary for this church.
Where did you serve a mission?
Served in San Diego, California.
Okay. Did you run into a lot of African Americans there?
You know, I did. I ran into quite a few. But the more salient experience for me is, you know, growing up in the community that I did, it was overwhelmingly Caucasian. I think there were maybe a handful of African American students in my high school, if that, that may be a bit generous. But I was called to work with the Hmong-speaking population in San Diego. And they were overwhelmingly refugees. They lived on the margins of society in San Diego. They didn't have access to the same level of services that others did due to language barriers, due to cultural barriers, and frankly due to, you know, ingrained systems of racial discrimination and marginalization in that city. So through my direct work with them, it was my first exposure to a community that could be sidelined. And even the idea that race played a major role in one's upbringing in one's life, whether one liked it or not. So my experience as a missionary, it was eye-opening. It helped me to realize that, you know, things are not as, you know, steady and staid and as predictable as we always assume them to be, you know, when we grew up in the frontier county of Western Wyoming.
Well, great. Well, I'm excited. I actually bought your book for the Cause of Righteousness. It's a great book, great history of Elijah Abel. And it's August right now, but we're not going to post this until February, which is our Black History Month. So I'm excited to get you a little bit early for that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Elijah Abel. I actually tried to get you last year and couldn't make it work. So I'm excited that you came to Utah and made it easier for me this time. So tell us a little bit, what are the earliest things that we know about Elijah Abel? Do we know what religion he came up with, or was he a slave and that sort of thing?
You know, we do not have a lot of hard data on Elijah's upbringing. You know, we know something about where he's from. You know, we know that he was born in Western Maryland. There were a number of potential counties, according to different documents, where he could have been born. You know, some say Frederick, others say Washington, others say Hancock. We know that he was born at some point between 1808 to 1812. As far as his religious upbringing, we know basically nothing about that. We don't even know with certainty that he was a slave. Statistically speaking, you know, that part of Maryland, you know, the free African-American versus slave African-American ratio, it broke in favor of slaves. So statistically speaking, he was probably a slave at some point. But beyond that speculation, we don't know with certainty. Really, the first hard documentation we have of Elijah's life, you know, it's through a photograph that we have in the George A. Smith Family Photograph Collection, and it identifies his baptism year as being 1832. And thanks to that photo, we have some sense of, you know, of how old he was, which is, you know, again, somewhere between, you know, we're looking at 24 to maybe 20 years old. But the documentation is pretty limited.
Okay. So I know on some of the census records, he was listed as I think a mulatto as well as a quadroon.
Yes.
I think there was some question about whether he might have had a white parent or at least something in there.
He certainly had, he certainly had European ancestry at some level, and you know, some have argued that he did in fact have a white father, and you know, there's a good argument to be made for that. You know, but again, the documentary record that we have is pretty scanty, so even that requires some level of interpolation. But it's certainly clear, based on the census records and the comments of people who knew him, that there was enough European ancestry in him to where they could call him a quadroon or even an octoroon, according to some accounts. According to the 1860 census, he's identified as, in fact, being, you know, black, right? There isn't kind of this middle road racial identification. And according to an 1838 document, he's identified as a quote-unquote Negro preacher. So again, he was phenotypically African / African-American enough to where an outsider, someone who did not know him, could see him as being of African descent.
Because I do know that there was a case, and I'm jumping ahead of the story, but I want to kind of talk a little bit about his race, where, you know, he was considered so lightly complected that he was confused as white. But is that true, or was that a false statement?
Hey, what is the background that you're thinking?
I'm thinking of there was a mistake among the church leaders. They had a discussion about him, and they said it was a mistake that he had been ordained.
All right, so you're referring to the Zebedee Coltrane testimony, and then there was some others' testimony that was coming from a man named Thomas Treve, who also claimed to have known him. Now, some of that testimony is ultimately unreliable as far as his priesthood status. You know, they claimed that his priesthood was stripped from him, you know, around 1843 or so. But according to later documentation that dates from his time in Cincinnati, it's pretty clear that he continued to hold the priesthood even into the 40s after Joseph Smith's death. So that testimony was erroneous in that regard, as well as in a few other regards as well. However, what this does speak to is the fact that he was light enough to where, he didn't quite have the same stigma as a darker colored person of African descent did at that time in that place in American society. And he could therefore, in certain circles, do what we'd call pass, right? He could pass
as white. Oh, really?
In certain circles, right? But in other circles, it just depended on the community in which he lived, whether, you know, a person would be able to identify him as, coming from African descent.
Okay, that's interesting. So, well, so you said he was baptized around 1832. By chance, do we know if there were any missionaries that baptized him?
What we do know is that it was by a man named Ezekiel Roberts, and that he was likely a resident of Hamilton County, Ohio. Now, that's interesting in that, you know, we know that Elijah Abels was born and raised in Maryland, and that he therefore likely made it to Ohio at some point. Now, since the Hamilton County, which is where Cincinnati is based, that was a major hub of the Underground Railroad. So, you know, did Elijah go there because that is where he found another number of other free blacks? You know, did he work on the Underground Railroad to some extent at that time? We don't know that with certainty. But we do know that it was in 1832, and that it was at the hands of Ezekiel Roberts, who was a resident there at that time. Was he serving as a missionary? That's less likely, because we know according to the 1830 census, he was they had his domicile there.
Oh, so we have him in Ohio in 1830.
Yes.
Okay, and then so Ezekiel Roberts was a missionary, came to somewhere in Ohio and
like. I mean, I'm not entirely certain that he was a missionary. That's not something that is clear, but we do know that he was living there at the time, either as a missionary or simply as a resident.
Now, was this close to Kirtland, or was it some distance?
No, it's quite a bit south. It's, you know, right on the Ohio River, on the border between Kentucky and Ohio.
Okay. Well, great. So do we... A lot of people think that he's the first black man who was ordained. I believe there's been a few others that might have been before him.
Mark Staker has speculated that maybe Black Pete, as he was called, also was ordained to the priesthood around 1831. That is a possibility. We do not have the documentation by which we can ascertain that. But you can say that Elijah Abels is the first documented person of African descent who received the priesthood. I mean, it is pristinely clear. We have the priesthood license that, you know, gives him the authority to preach the gospel wherever he was. That was given to him in 1836. It might have even been given to him earlier than that, but that is the documentation that we have.
So 1836 is the first time we're for sure he had the priesthood.
Yes.
So Mark Staker, I'm glad you brought that up. I interviewed him earlier this year. And one of the things that he said that typically, especially in referring to Black Pete, that Mormon men especially were ordained the priesthood immediately following baptism.
Yes.
So do you think that could have happened in Elijah Abels' case as well?
Yeah, I think it's likely. I think it's likely. We do not have the documentation making that explicitly clear. But I think it's less likely that it would have been a four-year wait from the time that he was baptized. If a person is going to be ordained to the priesthood, they're going to be ordained to the priesthood right away, as has been demonstrated by other scholars. So I think, even though I think that's a likelihood, and I would even say it's a probability, I would not ever say that we know that happened, simply because we don't have the clear documentation to back that up, or at least I'm not aware of it.
Yeah, now that would be common in our day as well. We don't typically, yeah. I mean, with any kind of a convert, males are usually ordained, a week or so after their baptism.
Yes.
So it doesn't seem like that would be a real stretch.
Right, right. I don't think if a person were to make that argument, they would not be going out on a limb.
Right, right. Well, great. So do we know how he got from, what part of Ohio was he again?
Hamilton County.
Hamilton County. I know that he made his way to Kirtland eventually. Do we know any about...
We know very little about how he made it from A to B. We can speculate on what it might have been like based on the experiences of others, but at the end of the day, we just know that by 1836, he was in Kirtland.
Okay. So, do you think that he worked on the temple in Kirtland?
Well, according to Zebedee Coltrane, he did, and that is why Elijah was ordained to the priesthood. Now, according to John Taylor, and we should make this clear, this was a couple generations later. This was in 1879 that people are saying these things. So, we're looking at quite a distance between the time being remembered and the time in which this is spoken of. And according to John Taylor, Joseph Smith ordained Elijah to the priesthood without fully understanding the word of the Lord. That Joseph kind of jumped the gun, according to John Taylor. But yes, according to Zebedee Coltrane, because of Elijah's efforts in working on the temple, that gave him the right to the priesthood that he would not have otherwise had.
So it's my understanding that he also was able to participate in what we would today call the initiatory rite in the Kirwan
yes.
temple. In the day, they called it the endowment.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yes. Zebedee Coltrane, at least according to his own account, there are some disputes about the accuracy of this account, but I'm going off of what we have. Zebedee Coltrane claimed that he administered the initiatory ordinance to Elijah Abel. So this involved the washing of feet, but he said he only did so after Joseph Smith basically pulled rank on him. Joseph Smith gave Zebedee Coltrane the instruction to administer the washing with an anointings to Elijah. And initially, Zebedee was quite disgusted by that idea. Like, just black skin, black people. It was seen as being so inferior and so base and so low that he didn't think it really worthy of a white man doing that, right? You're dignifying black people that way. And he couldn't countenance that. So eventually, Joseph Smith said, no, you've got to do it, and I'm basically invoking my authority to do so. And Zebedee Coltrane did so out of obedience, but he was not happy about it.
Yeah, yeah. Do we know what Elijah Abel did for an occupation there in Kirtland?
Yeah, so, we have a sense that he was a carpenter at some level. He would later be a carpenter in Nauvoo when he was working as an undertaker. He would build coffins for people. So that certainly played a major role in his occupation.
An undertaker doesn't sound like a fun job.
No. I have friends, though. They get jazzed about embalming people, and it's a fascinating thing for them. I guess we all have our the little puzzles we like to solve.
Well, and I'm wondering if that was because, nobody wanted to do it, and so Elijah volunteered for that, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's seen as menial labor. It's seen as something that is low and base, and certainly not something that most people would voluntarily choose to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't choose that, that's for sure. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Russell Stevenson. In our next conversation, we'll talk about Elijah's mission to Canada. Did you know that he was chased by a mob?
And I don't think it's a coincidence that at approximately the same time, Elijah is being chased by a tar and feather mob. He runs to the home of Sarah Beckstead. And who is it that ends up defending Elijah's life? Well, it isn't the man of the house, but it's Sarah Beckstead, who comes out with a rifle in hand and opens fire on the mob. And they quickly disperse.
Oh, wow.
So Sarah Beckstead saved Elijah's life that night.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.